station, minority controlled,
and operated and serving the African American community for over 40 years.
The views and opinions of the guest and host you hear on 1010 WOLB
are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Radio 1, its sponsors, or advertisers.
Eat up, little cigar. On a marble stand, trying to find the ocean, looking everywhere. Hard times in the city, in a hard town by the sea.
And a good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of the Coach's Corner with Coach Butch McAdams and TJ Smith. And this show is sponsored in part by J&W Brown General Contracting. Now, they're licensed full-service home improvement contractors servicing all your home improvement needs, renovations, listen to this, both interior and exterior. Now, if you're in need of their service now or maybe in the future, write this number down, 410-728-5000. Again, that's 410-728-5000. That's the number for J&W Brown General Contracting. And let me tell you about a step forward. They have provided residential treatment services, mental health, and substance abuse treatment for well over 20 years. Their goal is to return to our communities men and women who have hope and a future. Now, if you're in need of help or know someone who needs help, don't hesitate. Pick up the phone and dial 410-462-6001. That's 410-462-6001 and ask for Dr. Campbell. And last but not least, Shooting for Peace. That's a grassroots nonprofit, and they use sports and current and former pro athletes to teach life lessons to youth and their families and using Christian principles. And you can reach out to them at 443-252-5519. That's 443-252-5519. TJ Smith is on a vacation, and so I've asked Patrick Henderson, you just heard him, the Patrick Henderson Meet the People show, to do double duty today, to co-host with me. And Patrick, are you there?
I am here. Good afternoon, Coach.
And thank you so much. But I am so excited to have our guest, because this guy is the GOAT. You know, you talk about Michael Jordan and Bill Russell and Willie Mays and Jim Brown, Tom Brady being the GOAT in their respective sports. For my money, in talk radio, this guy's the GOAT. He's been around for well over 30 years. He was my mentor, and let me say, he was the first person to put Coach Butch McAdams on full-time. Without further ado, let me bring on the renowned, the legendary, the iconic Black Eagle, Joe Madison. Joe Madison, thank you so much for your time, man. You've always been so gracious. Joe, are you there? All right. I can hear you now, Joe.
Oh, okay.
All right. Let's see as Joe Madison gets settled. But if I can wait for anybody on the air, it's going to be Joe Madison, because Patrick, this guy put me on the air full time doing sports, and he was a tremendous supporter. I learned so much in radio for him. At the time, he was a a talent, a host, and the program, the director. And that was when, I would have to say, that was when WOL and WOLB was in its heyday. Let's see if we have the Eagle with us. Joe, are you there? Okay, we're still having some problems with Joe. But, Patrick, you had a very interesting show.
Thank you.
And I heard some of the comments just for some folks who may not have heard your show. And if you didn't, folks, hey, Monday is powerful. And
yeah,
so you start off at 11:30 with the Patrick Henderson Meet the People. And then, of course, the Coach's Corner at 1 o'clock. But, you know, Patrick, you were talking about the young people, and you have a passion. You have a commitment for the betterment of young people. Just briefly let our listeners know what your discussion was like.
Well, the discussion was interesting. We have a lot of organizations here in Baltimore who are getting lots and lots of money. I mean, lots and trains of money. And when I mean that, I mean one company, I believe it's Roca, got $17 million a few years ago from one mayor. And today, in today's Baltimore Sun, there was an article about this company there. And some of my co-hosts had some not so favorable things to say about this company. But you and I both know it takes time to do anything. I'm just happy that somebody's trying to do something. Now, their efficacy, in other words, are they efficient at what they're doing, is the question, because they're getting so much money, where there's some groups in Baltimore that we know are doing great works, and they can't get any money from the city.
I agree.
And, you yeah. know, and we balk about that.
Yeah.
And it continues to happen because the city leaders, we don't know if they're being paid. These people contribute to their campaigns. We don't understand it. And so the show kind of went into, do we need to pay our politicians? And as you said, one gentleman said that if you take money for as a politician, no more.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Joe, are you with us?
Are you with? I'm with you. I can hear you loud and clear.
And I can hear you now loud and clear. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Thank you so much.
I apologize. I was in the car, so who knows what the technology.
You know what, Joe? You don't ever have to apologize to me because you've been such a great friend, a great mentor, and just awesome. And it's just such an awesome honor to have you aboard here in the Coach's Corner. Just start off talking a little bit about yourself. During the introduction, as I've stated, you know, you were a tremendous athlete, and I want folks to know that, a heck of a football player. Then from the football field to the activism, and from activism to radio. But expound a little more on that, Joe Madison, a.k.a.
I got to tell you, football was my ticket to college, and I understood that from the very beginning, because, you know, with like most people who grew up in our community. And it's ironic because I just attended the 55th anniversary, I'm sorry, class reunion of my high school in Dayton, Ohio. And you happened to mention football. Two of the greatest athletes of our class was honored. One, and these are names back in Ohio. Rudy Benjamin, who was our classmate, good friend. I've known him ever since we were 4 years old. He was Mr. Basketball, All-American in our class. And then that same year, we had Leo Hayden, who was mm-hmm. Mr. Football in Ohio. He ended up at Ohio State. Rudy yeah. ended up at Michigan State. And I think, you know, and then he Leo got drafted. But when I was in high school, I was a lineman. Now, you know, we were laughing, and I always like telling this story. and those are the days I was a pulling guard. And but I was a lightweight compared to the guard on the other side, and he's no longer with us, a guy named Michael Maxwell. And Michael was huge, man. Michael was a big lineman. But what happened was they knew the opposing teams. Coach said, well, there's no sense in us trying to go through him or go with him. Let's go and pick on the little guy on the left side. That's what they did. Well, because they did it, and I had a great coach that taught me how to handle, taught me how to pull, and taught me how to knock folks off their feet. So they'd always come on my side. I did my job breaking Leo loose, who went on to be an All-American, and hell, I went on to make All-City. And, you know, so, but when I got to college, there was no way I was going to be a lineman. But because I had a little, I could keep up with my running back, I had a little speed, and they, as soon as I got to college, they turned me into a fullback. Mm. And so I, all conference and honors there, and the activism really started simultaneous with my athletics, because, you know, at that time, you got to realize we were just trying to get Black history and professors on campus, but African American professors on campus where there were none. I mean, we were just struggling to try to get soul food in the restaurant. I mean, in the cafeteria, and a Black cultural center, and you know, because you're an athlete, a lot of people on campus looked up to you, and we should point out this wasn't just when at my school, but it was also happening all over the country. You may remember, Coach, when I think it was the University of Wyoming, where they got rid of all the African American football players, and because they told them that they had to cut their afros, they could not participate in student protests, and they actually took the scholarships away from all the Black athletes. And this was happening all over the country. So, you know, it was a combination of athletics and activism. But most important of all, there was this understanding that whatever you do, you still got to perform in that classroom, and you got to stay on campus, because you're no good if you get kicked out of school or if you fail.
Mm-hmm. And folks, if you're just joining us here, this is another edition of the Coach's Corner. Coach Butch McAdams, my co-host, TJ Smith is on vacation. I've got Patrick Henderson sitting in with me, and our very special guest is the renowned Black Eagle himself, Joe Madison. And Joe,
I know Patrick should get an award. He's hanging out in your country. I mean, you know. Patrick, you're hanging out with a dangerous man. So,
well,
I hope you realize that.
Well, Joe, you know what? And I'll say this for all of you coaches, haters out there: blame Joe Madison, because he was the one that got me started. And Joe, and you were one of the brains behind Larry Young and the coach being a team on the air.
Well, you know, the funny thing was that Coach didn't think that there was a sports talker or a coach could deal with politics.
That's right.
And you know, and the reality is everything is political.
You're right.
I mean, everything, anybody that's, I just got through talking about the politics when I was in college. Look at Bill Russell. mm-hmm. just passed away. And nobody was, I mean, you want to talk about an activist, there's still that, there's that iconic photograph of yes. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, then Lew Alcindor, Jim Brown, Bill Russell, and
Bobby Mitchell,
Bobby Mitchell. And all of these men were there behind who? Supporting Muhammad Ali.
That's right.
And yeah. and that was heavy. That was heavy politics. I've become good friends that I never thought I would be. I'd ever get a chance to meet him in person. But Dr. John Carlos.
Yes.
And I are now very close. And so, you know, it was just a matter of letting the powers to be at Radio One understand that that's not a difficult transition from sports and politics. And that duel were the, you know, as you all know, was the pride of Baltimore. There's no if, and, buts about it. And how long was the team? You and Larry were, what, 20-plus years, I think.
20-plus years, absolutely. You know, going back and forth. And Patrick, I remember, and as Joe alluded to, and when, you know, Joe had the idea initially to place us together, and I said, well, you know, Joe, I'm a sports guy, but I don't know politics that well. And Joe looked me in the eye and said, let me tell you something. He said, politics is sports. I never forget And I often quote you, and I quoted you about a moment ago. One of the other things that you said was, in politics, there are no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, but permanent interests. Expound on that.
That is a quote from former Congressman William Clay Sr., who represented St. Louis, ironically, where I ended up graduating at Washington University in St. Louis from. He was an original member of the Congressional Black Caucus. He's still with us, by the way. I think he is now in his late 90s. But that was a quote. Matter of fact, there is a book, and I encourage everyone to get a copy of it. It is titled Permanent Interest. Mm. Permanent Interest. And that was his quote, that in politics, there are no permanent friends or permanent enemies, just permanent interests. And in a way, it's, look, what members of Congress do is that they maneuver for votes. And what we have to do as activists is that we have to mobilize. Now, if we're effective at mobilizing voters, then these members of Congress or state representatives or city council members, any elected official knows that they better figure out how can I get votes that I need. And then it may turn out that the next issue, I may have to vote against that person. And that's, in essence, how politics works there. I've had to shake the hands of folks. My grandparents would roll over in their grave. I once was involved, and I have a my first book is out, Radioactive, and I talk about the struggle we went through getting Southern Sudan and turning it into a state. And one of the people that helped us was Jesse Helms. Mm. And there was nothing I had in common with Jesse Helms, except he supported making Southern Sudan a country, which today is the youngest country on the planet. And he worked tirelessly to make that happen. And I remember testifying in his Foreign Affairs Committee with a former Congressman, Walter Fonchoy. And we got a favorable vote from him. And Walter Fonchoy said, "Joe, yeah, you got to go up and shake his hand." And I said, "Man, I can't shake Jesse Helms' hand, man. Are you kidding me?" He said, "No, you've got to shake his hand," because he was chairman of that committee. And that vote could have gone up and down based on what he wanted to do as chairman. And that's just the reality of politics.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But, Joe, talk about the, and you have been on both sides, meaning that you were one of the first African-Americans that I was aware of that hosted a show on a predominantly white listening audience station. And then you come to, you know, to Radio One, and you're on a predominantly black listening station. But talk about the responsibility then and now of black radio, so to speak.
Well, I don't care where you are. I don't care if I was with Radio One or with WRC or WWDB in Philadelphia. The thing I've always believed, and since we're talking about talk radio, but it's true in whatever endeavor. I was taught that there are three things you basically have. Well, I'm going to give a fourth one, but there are three things that you basically have to do. You have to be original. That's what made Larry Young and Coach unique, and that they were original. There wasn't anybody on the air like them. There was nobody on the air like them. Number two, you have to be authentic. In other words, Coach had to be himself. He couldn't pretend to be somebody else. He couldn't be John Thompson, who had a radio show on here in Washington, D.C. He had to be authentic. And Larry Young had to be authentic, which meant you can't fake it. The voice doesn't lie. You have to be authentic. And then the third thing is you have to be daring. You've got to do things that, and oftentimes take a gamble. Ownership may not understand it, may not even like it, but you have to be daring. And then I have added a fourth, and that is ownership. Kathy Hughes knows what she wants, her station, her brand. Let me put it that way. She knows her brand. And then she makes sure that anybody that works for Radio One, from the sales department to the on-air talent, these are folks who understand what her brand is, and she insists that that brand is maintained. But that goes back to the first three: original, authentic, and daring. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you go to Kathy Hughes and say, "Well, look, I think Larry and Coach, Joe, there's nothing like them." I said, "That's exactly what you want." And look how long it lasted. So what I've done, I don't care where I work. I don't care where I broadcast from. I maintain those three things. Now, as I said in my, as I wrote in my book, I've been fired more than I've been hired. and so the reality is that I'm daring. I'll give you an example.
Please.
I was asked, I left Detroit, where I did talk radio for 10 years on weekends, just weekends. But I learned the trade. That's the other thing. God, you got to learn it, man. It's like anything else. You got to learn the trade. I don't care if you're on radio broadcasting or walking dogs or living. You got to learn the trade. And so I learned it. And then I was asked to, our good friend Bernie. Remember Bernie?
Oh, yeah.
Radio One. Well, I took Bernie's place in Philadelphia. Because he got tired of commuting, from Baltimore to Philadelphia. So I ended up moving to Philadelphia from my hometown in Detroit, and the weekend show, and was given my first full-time job, which happened to be 12 midnight to 5:30 in the morning.
Woo!
Now, that's true. And then, so I was being authentic. I was being real, original. And I was literally called into the president's office with the program director, who told me that they were getting letters. This was before social media. That they were getting letters that I was talking about black folk too much in Philadelphia. And that I need to really cool it. Now I'm the only black person on the air, and all the white broadcasters were talking about anything and everything. And here I'm in a city with and I don't have to tell you about Philadelphia, but so I just said, you know what? I guess the activist came out in me, and I said, you know, screw you. You know, I'm not going to put up with that, because then I wouldn't be authentic. So I went home, told my wife, Sherry, that I'm going to book Ben, at the time, Ronald Brown, who was running to be the first chairman of the Democratic National Committee.
Mm-hmm.
He was a good friend. And then the next hour, I'm going to book Louis Farrakhan. Well, the purpose was that, you know, all black folk ain't alike. You've got the Ronald Browns, and you got the Louis Farrakhans. Man, them suckers called me in the next morning and fired me. And the under the auspice, now get this, that I was going back to Detroit on weekends to do my weekend show, and they said, well, we want you to stay in Philadelphia on weekends. Well, you don't pay me to live on weekends. Right. And well, this also a conflict of interest. What's the conflict? Well, you're working for us, and you're also on the air in Detroit. Well, hell, man, the signals didn't even cross
different
each other.
Markets, totally different markets.
I mean, different markets and all of that. So I ended up being unemployed for over a year, and then this break came where it was a ABC talk show with Geraldo Rivera about talk radio. And why isn't there any black people in New York? And why aren't there any black folk on talk radio? And somebody in the audience who had WRC said came to me after the show and said, well, look, if they don't want you in Philadelphia, would you think about moving to Washington, D.C.? And that's how I ended up at WRC, and I ended up at WOL and Radio 1, because in those days, people were selling and buying radio stations like IHOP was flipping pancakes, man.
Wow.
The station changed. It went from news talk to sports.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, business talk, then to sports. So that and then Kathy Hughes said, "Well, we'd love to have you come over," and I didn't even hesitate. There was no ifs, ands, buts about it.
Mm-hmm.
And Patrick, you have a question?
No, I'm just fascinated by his history, because I see him sometimes on CNN. I used to listen, you know, when I lived in D.C. and stuff, so it was just fascinating listening to what he's had to go through to be where he is today. So I have some questions, but I'm certainly willing to wait for him to finish telling this history. I find it totally fascinating.
And I have to tell you, when Joe came over, he was the program director also. Uh-huh. And it was, you know, I have worked under several program directors, but he was the best one by far.
Well, I appreciate
he was so
that.
Organized. Everything was just, you know, in order. And Joe, talk about the, it was almost a dream team in terms of black talkers that we had back in the day with you and Bernie McCain and Eric St. James and C. Miles and Lisa Mitchell. It didn't get any better than that.
Well, that's because you had those three things going for you. And the fourth thing was ownership. I mean, you know, everyone you recognize, and I say it again, they were authentic. Every person you mentioned, they were authentic. Nobody tried to be like the other person. I can do what Bernie McCain did. How Bernie McCain was doing talk radio probably before I was born. You know, and Lisa and all that, they were authentic. They were original. They did their thing. And in some cases, particularly you remember C. Miles.
Oh, absolutely. We had him on the show about 3 weeks ago. Yes.
Oh yeah. C. Miles, was daring. I mean, nobody heard anything like C. Miles. And sometimes he, you know, he stepped over the boundaries, and we all do at some point in time. But that was why they were that good. And as you know, our numbers started to increase, and a lot of that has to do, of course, with the signal too. But no matter what kind of signal you have, you got to put people on who are original, daring, and authentic. Because I said to folks and to anybody else, the voice doesn't lie. I have known personalities that when talk radio was really taken over by conservative radio, a matter of fact, Sunday in CBS Sunday Mornings getting ready to do a special. I just finished an interview. Why do conservatives seem to dominate talk radio? And it's in large part because of sponsors, and because most business people are conservative. And I don't mean with a politically, but you know, they're just conservative. But the reality is that the ownership, I mean, that, you know, if they're business people, they're going to want to hear voices that represent them as
their
well as the community. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but that's the reality of it. And everybody was good. People, they were pros.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
A pro. Eric St. James was a pro. Yeah.
I got a question for you. Where does the word liberty come into your? Yes, sir.
Like what? Like give me liberty or give me death?
Yes, because you said you were being conducted. People were trying to control you in Philadelphia, but when you came to Radio One, you had liberty. Was it because of the cause? The cause was unanimous. Or was it because the ownership or the management realized there was a need for what you were saying, which gave you liberty to speak?
I hear you using the word liberty, so that has some serious connotations.
Yes, sir.
But the reality is that that you know you had owners that understood what the radio station represented, had always represented from the very beginning, that they went from music. Remember, WOL was not a talk station, but Kathy Hughes, Alfred, and recognized that the community needed a voice.
Yes,
they needed a voice because there was no voice. There was no voice. They needed a voice in Baltimore. They needed a voice in Washington, D.C., the way we need a voice today. They needed a voice. And right. and that was their mission. And so you had to buy into that mission. Simple as that. Simple as that. Now, if you thought you were going to get over there and try to be some right wing, conservative, and you don't believe in the things that the Congressional Black Caucus was doing. Let me say this quickly. We didn't always agree on everything, nor should we. Hell, man, when I was at Radio One, we were allowed to lead a march to deal with police brutality, where Artie Elliott was a young man. Mother listened to the station, and he was killed by police officers, shot him like 14 times while he was handcuffed in a police car.
Prince George was
some people in Baltimore, and people from Baltimore joined us. We tried to get those policemen get a new trial. Now, and by the way, not every radio station would let you march from where the station used to be in Prince George's County down to Annapolis.
Right.
But you, that's, so if you call that liberty, I call it freedom. and we had the freedom to do that. Matter of fact, we were encouraged to do it.
Okay.
And Joe, from a format perspective, and, you know, it's like you've been a mentor to me. I mentor young aspiring talk hosts as well now. But I tell them, and I learned from you, people get hung up on caller-driven. Talk about
I guess it's just my philosophy. Anybody can light up the phone lines, and all you have to do is talk about race, gun control, what's another one? Zodiac signs. no, really, because if you say, well, I remember a guy. We used to, in Detroit, we had a woman every Saturday would come on, and she would interpret the zodiac sign. Well, hell, everybody's got a zodiac sign, and the phones would light up. Here's what I learned and was taught: nobody cares about anybody else's zodiac sign but their own. So the lines would be lit, but that doesn't make for good talk radio.
That's right.
And then I interviewed one time Alex Haley. He was promoting his new book, the author of Roots. And I had Alex Haley on for 2 hours, and there was not one phone call. And now, wait a minute. And the reason was he was such a good storyteller. Nobody wanted to interrupt what he was saying. Talk radio is really listening radio. And 97% of people, and I've seen this figure, they've studied this, don't call talk radio. And I have a practice now on my Sirius XM show. You can only call once a week. That's it. Once a week. One call a week. And the reason I do that is, and I learned this from Larry King, Joe, you got 9 or 10 lines. Now, if you got a national show and you can't light up 9 or 10 lines, then you don't need to be in the business. But what we found out, it was always the regular callers. Oh, my goodness. And they would hold the lines where nobody else could get through. And it sounds like a club. It's like, and so you want listeners to be able to participate. And quite honestly, you got to be able to engage your listeners, challenge your listeners. Sometimes you got to hang up on them. But in sports talk, I find it fascinating, Coach, how you sports talkers, y'all can argue and fuss with each other. Just fuss and yell and all that. And not one of you is on the court or on the field and can't do a damn thing about the outcome of the game. But in politics, you are the team. Mm-hmm. You are on the field. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, don't get offended because, you know, somebody has a strong opinion. And you know, I'm not, this is not, I don't, look, it's for adults. And yes, I can have an opinion. I will have an opinion. Oftentimes people want to hear that opinion. And it's not necessarily that they have to agree. But I'm not a traffic cop sitting there saying, next call, next call, next call. No, that's not good. That's not a good broadcaster.
Yeah, I have a problem with that because some people call, and I not only do I respect them, but I respect their mind. You know, and I have to learn how to curb it better.
I have respect for people I disagree with. I just got through saying I didn't agree with Jesse Helms, but I respect what he did.
Right.
I mean, but let's be honest, it's a matter of style. To be honest with you, I mean, some people are combative, some folk aren't. Some people, you know, like to, you know, I like a good argument. But here's the other thing. You just can't call up and say anything. I mean, I've had folks call up my show and say, well, you know, Michelle Obama is really a man.
Wow.
I'm not kidding you, man. I'm not kidding you.
I've heard that.
Michelle Obama, but she's really a man. Now, where did you hear that? You know, or you get people on the other side who deliberately call you up to try to use your platform to push their agenda.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to sit there and have you use my platform for your agenda. If you don't like my position, then go get a podcast. You know. So the reality is the reality is you hold your own, but make sure it's factual.
Yes, sir.
That's the key. Make sure it's factual. And the caller has to be factual, not just opinionated.
Right. Ask for citations. Absolutely. You know, I got one other question, and I know the time is tipping down. It's already the half hour, but I wanted
And by the way, my wife is mad at both of you because she's sitting in the car.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to blame it on you and the coach. And
What do you think? Is Trump going to jail? Who's going to get him?
Man. Let me tell you something. He's going to get himself. You know, a con man can only survive so long. Eventually, people catch up. Bloomberg said it clearly when he ran for when Trump ran for a president. And that is that. And Bloomberg said, I'm from New York. I know this man. I know this man, and I know a con when I see one. Part of this, I blame the media. Now, I know we're part of the media, but I got to tell you, in all honesty, Black Talk Radio knew what he was about the day he came down that elevator and announced that we knew what he was about when he went after the Central Park Five.
Yes,
even
sir.
When they were found innocent, we knew what he was about when he was discriminating with his real estate investments and apartments. We knew what he was about, and at some point, mainstream media better start paying attention to us, and because we knew that he was a con man, we knew he was racist. We knew. That when he was running around here saying that President Obama was from Kenya and wasn't qualified to be a candidate for president, we knew that and we said it. I don't think there was a person on Black Talk Radio, ownership. I'm not talking about these right wing conservatives out here who you can buy with a ham sandwich. We knew that. And we were saying that, and so that's why our voice has to be heard. But the listener has to, and the sponsors have to support us, because mm-hmm. first and foremost, this is a business.
Right.
And that's, and you got to know your numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fortunate, and let me tell you, I gave it all I had at Radio One, and then I had the opportunity to be able to come over to Sirius XM, and it's about a fit. And that's one of the things, I'm not filtered because we don't have FCC rules, not like you do. So I get to curse. Now, let me tell you, I'll never curse around Mrs. Hughes. and I certainly wouldn't on her radio show, on her broadcast, but over at Sirius, I listened to these folks, man. They have X-rated channels, and they said, no, you can't. But what I do is I say, well, I'll tell you what I do. I'm going to put a dollar in. I have a swear jar. And George Wallace, the comedian, said to me, Joe, you know black folks don't swear, they cuss. And so I had to change it to a cuss jar.
Okay.
And then I put, and some of the, you know, some older people would call in, oh, Mr. Madison, you really shouldn't use that kind of language, yada, yada, yada. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll put a dollar in the cuss jar or the swear jar every time I cuss, and I'll donate the money to a cause.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would say, oh, that's okay. But now I'm going to tell you the honest truth. This is the honest truth. I'm speaking at Morehouse. I finished. I'm standing there taking selfies. I walked out of that auditorium with $400 in cash.
Mm.
And most of the money. And they said, this is for the swear jar. And I said, no, I can't take. No. This is for the swear jar, and most of the money came from ministers. I'm not kidding you, man. People live vicariously to you guys.
Yeah,
they do. You know, folks are cussing. They cussing Donald Trump out and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Man, they listening to the radio and cussing back at the radio. So the reality is, you respect the platform, you respect mm-hmm. the ownership, mm-hmm. but the most important thing is you always have to, you have to be authentic, original,
wow.
and that's the daring part.
Yes,
that's
sir.
The daring. I mean, he can cuss on radio. And then people just tune in sometimes just to hear you cuss somebody out.
Joe,
I wish I could.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, thank you for your time. We don't want to keep you any longer. Right. But let our listeners know where they can pick up that book, man.
You can go on Amazon.com. You can go on JoeMadison.com. And let me tell you, it's really, it took 5 years to work with David Canton, Professor Canton, out of Florida. What people are telling me is that I always thought of you, Joe Madison, as just a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. I never thought, because that's the only way I knew you. And so it, in essence, it goes back. I go back to high school. I go back to my days with my grandfather, who my grandparents who reared me, mm-hmm. and working on a dump, which we call landfills today. We hauled trash. We took stuff to the junkyard. I didn't always walk around in nice suits and nice shoes, but I go back to teachers and mentors and so that people get a sense at least that, oh, now I know why you're the way you are.
Mm-hmm.
Uh, it's called Radioactive.
Radioactive,
a memoir of an activist. Who just happened to have a platform in talk radio.
Joe Madison, Joe, my friend, my mentor. Thank you so much.
I think my wife has taken the car and carnapped me. No, I'm just teasing. She's my executive producer.
I know.
I tell you, man, I always say to people, she's got the wisdom of Solomon. She's got the
Did we lose Joe? Okay, we lost Joe, but hey, folks, that was the world-famous talker, as I say, the GOAT, Joe Madison. And we've got a few more minutes. If folks were online, you want to call up and give reflections on Joe Madison and what you heard, you can do that. And, Sean, if people are still on, here's their chance, 410-481-1010. We'll take the All right, we got 5 minutes and three callers. All right, who's up first?
Yeah, how you guys?
Yeah.
How you guys doing?
All right.
I wish you guys had asked Mr. Madison about the boycott that he led in Dearborn, Michigan, against Henry Ford Jr.
Wow. Okay.
He went against the status quo, literally, to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The boycott, because it was the right thing to do.
As he stated, mm-hmm, and thanks, Gene, for the call. And, you know, as he stated, that you take your activism to the streets. And, you know, anytime you're doing a talk show, you just can't stay in the studio. You got to get into the community. That's a part of the job. All right, 410-481-1010. Next caller. All right, D, you're up.
Well, Coach, for me, Mr. Joe, is always an honor and a pleasure, sir, to hear you anytime on radio or TV outlets. Your name speaks for itself, sir, in this business. Make no question, doubt about it. And the last thing I need to say to Mr. Joe is this. You keep doing what you're doing, because I know you're going to keep doing what you're doing, because your name speaks for itself. Make no ifs, ands, buts about it. When I hear people complaining all the time, the first thing that sticks in my mind is one of his famous quotes. What are you going to do about it? No ifs, ands, buts about it. And Coach, I give you your props, man, when we got permanent interest. But although sometimes you make me boil, make my blood boil 212 degrees and over.
Well, but you heard Joe say that. I'm doing my job as a talk show host, right?
No question. I heard him. I heard him loud and clear, man.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. All
right. 410-481-1010. We have Haki up next. Haki.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Good afternoon, Coach, and to you, Brother Patrick. Good to hear you, and it's good to hear the Black Eagle on. So I'm very grateful to hear that, brother. I want to get a copy of that disc too. It was a classic. I appreciate, kind of starting off my radio listening to Bernie more so. But when I'm in the D.C. area, he has a number one fan, Sister Nisi, in Prince George's County in Hyattsville. So I'm just grateful. And one of the things that I learned, from him and his activism, is the work he did around Darfur. And, as I'm going to Africa, I'm able to really put the pieces together and know just the ramifications of that advocacy. And I hear, his work and his legacy still lives on in many other spaces that, I'm kind of interacting with. So I just say thank you, well, Coach, and, appreciate you and appreciate you, Patrick. All right, y'all.
Thank you. Thank you. And, folks, every Monday we're going to have some great guests. It could be radio personalities, politicians, sports figures, community people, but we're going to have guests for you. But, Patrick, Joe gave us Radio 101. For all the folks who have a show out there, all the folks who are aspiring, I hope you took down notes, and I hope you understood what he said.
Yes, sir. Great lessons. I wrote them down. We were listening to the dean.
And it not only was it informational, it was inspiring. And see, now callers are calling in. I didn't even know about the Dearborn thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Henry Ford was one of the most racist men on the face of the earth. He was so stupid, though, that he decided that he wanted white people to learn how to square dance and listen to nothing but country music. And he didn't even know that black people invented square dancing.
And I think we need to be better historians and to understand who were on our side and who wasn't, because sometimes we get the signals mixed up. And I'm going to tell you, and if you do your research, you're going to find out one of the most overrated racists. And if you ask the average person about this person, they would say, oh, he's a racist, he's terrible. But if you do your research, you find it's the opposite. And, you know, you may know this. Elvis Presley.
Yes, sir.
Elvis Presley was the total opposite of the perception people had of him. You know, Chuck D. Elvis was a hero the most, but he didn't mean mind to be simple, racist, and plain. Blank him and John Wayne. Elvis was not a racist. And I researched this. Elvis has helped so many African-American black entertainers. But also, do you know he was a regular contributor to Dr. King and the movement back in the day?
No, I didn't know that, but I do know that he stole a lot of music from black people. I do know that as a musician, that he stole, put his name and got copyrights on songs that he had no writing to do. He might have made Big Mama Thornton, "You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog." She didn't have no hit with it, but he heard it and went and recorded it and had a smash with it. So I know the
I researched that, because I think if you research,
You know me, I wouldn't say it if I can't prove it.
Absolutely, Patrick. Absolutely. And finally, that situation with the 9-year-old boy.
Yeah.
I wasn't there, but I do believe, my gut tells me, I could be wrong, it's a gut, that was not an accident.
Mm.
That was not an accident.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard people talking about the brain and the development, and that's true. But you know what? That goes back to parenting. Because if you've got proper parenting, at 9, you know what's from right from wrong. You know that.
Right.
Right. And at 9... how is this guy or this young boy outside of the house?
Right. And walking with a gun down the street.
That's on the parent. That right there is on the parent.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you see that company that is Anna, whoever worked for, they fired her immediately.
Right.
They fired because they don't want any culpability for the case. They fired her. Why would she leave a gunman out and know there's children in the house? That was just neglect, man. Benign neglect. That was just don't give a care. A kid, a 9-year-old kid walking down the street with a gun.
Right, sure.
Saying, Coach, why did nobody call?
Well, folks, Patrick, thank you so much for joining me. It's been an honor. And folks, thanks for tuning in. And as I said, every week, Coach's Corner would Coach Butch McAdams, T.J. Smith, we're going to have some great guests for you. It's going to be great listening. We'll take a few calls, but as you heard, Good Talk Radio is more about listening. And speaking of listening, hey, same time, same station, next Monday at 1 p.m., the Coach's Corner with T.J. Smith, Coach Butch McAdams. Make good decisions, because life is hard, but it's even harder when you're stupid. Be blessed.